Hello, everybody. Great to have you with us on the Great America Show. We're all about the American way, and here we go. We're in it now. The political season is year-round, and now it stays hot in the modern era of partisan politics. There are lulls from time to time and amazing, sometimes lofty and highly elevating occurrences and even lows that roll in on occasion. And the experiential norm seems to be the unexpected and always percolating just beneath the surface, just over the horizon, down the road and up the creek, over yonder, down the rabbit hole. There's always an event, an incident, an element, that special moment when the mask comes off, the curtain rises and the dawn breaks. And there, lo and behold, and don't hold back, is an awakening. A consciousness that arrives like a bolt of lightning and a crack of thunder, sharp, bright, instant, and joyous. And that time has arrived, my fellow Americans, the time for truth, truth all across our great country. So here's the truth, just to start the party. The 2020 election was stolen. Let's say that again, together now. The 2020 election was stolen. Doesn't that feel better? One more time. The 2020 election was stolen. Marxist leftist Dems and the deep state, so-called, aligned themselves with the titans of big tech and social media. You know, Google, Twitter, Facebook. You know, American oligarchs like Eric Schmidt, Larry Page, Jack Dorsey, and Mark Zuckerberg, and the rest in Silicon Valley, who don't have enough billions to warrant naming them at times like this. Apologies to all you in the Valley who don't really count. Yes, I'm talking to you. But there's more. The orchestrated theft of the 2020 election required the genuflection of all those corporate news media outlets and their minions, including the Washington Post and New York Times, Discovery's CNN and Comcast's MSNBC, of course, Vanity Fair and The Atlantic, Disney's ABC News, and the rest. All comfortable with the lies about Russian disinformation that most of them peddled for 5 years, from the moment that Donald Trump announced he was running for president in 2015. And guess who authored the original sin against Donald Trump and the rest of us, against America? None other than his political opponent in the 2016 race for president, one Hillary Rodham Clinton. Who were her sponsors, fellow cabalists and conspirators? President Obama's intelligence chiefs, that's who, top officials of the Justice Department, State Department, the Secret Service. The Marxist leftist Dems inhabit all of government, but those agencies and departments, they make up the top tier of leadership in the effort to overthrow the president. Many of them are under investigation now for originating the plot to overthrow, to destroy Donald Trump's presidency. And in the fall of 2020, that conspiracy grew desperate, afraid the incriminating content of Hunter Biden's laptop just might be made public. They prepared the battleground for the public information war ahead. President Obama's FBI Director Christopher Wray went to Capitol Hill in September and launched the Russian disinformation lie to give corporate media, big tech, cover to stop the reporting on the laptop. The steal was on. Joining us now is the New York Post's Miranda Devine. She's the best political columnist, in my opinion, working today, and author of the bestseller, Laptop from Hell. And she has covered this story from the outset. The role of the Hunter Biden and his laptop is playing out in nearly every scandal now. It's good to have you with us, especially in these interesting times of ours.
Thanks, Lou. Yes, interesting times, the ancient Chinese curse. We certainly do live in interesting times, but they're pretty perilous, too.
They're perilous. And John Paul McIsaac said point blank, that if the contents of the Hunter Biden laptop had been released to the public when they should have been, that is, with the first effort to give it over to the FBI, that he believes that Trump would have been cleared automatically in his first impeachment. Your reaction?
Well, look, I think he could be right. It seems that the FBI just sat on a lot of exculpatory information that was on the laptop about Burisma and Ukraine and all these sort of machinations behind the scenes that led to Joe Biden demanding that Viktor Shokin, the prosecutor, be fired just as he was investigating and seizing and putting out a warrant for the arrest of the owner of Burisma, seizing his property, who was Hunter Biden's paymaster. He was paying him $1 million a year to sit on the board of Burisma and try and resuscitate his reputation as a corrupt oligarch who'd been the energy minister of the previous Russia-aligned government.
Now, as we go through all of this, as you've lived this laptop since certainly October of 2020, yeah. It is clear, straightforward evidence of corruption, perfidy of all kinds, and criminal activities, and all of it extends to national security. Is one example. McIsaac said that clearly within the contents of that laptop were indications and evidence that Hunter Biden was trying to move into Ukraine with quote unquote bio research or bio labs, end quote, activities and trying to get those established. This is really troubling stuff. By any account, it would have all been in the clear there for any secret service or intelligence agency to pick up. This is just really stunning stuff. And the FBI was clearly under orders not to touch it. The corruption established in this country, again, outweighs everything that we thought was going on, whether it was in Ukraine or whether it was in China. This country's government was the most corrupt of all.
Yes, it certainly rivaled it. And, Joe Biden had been running this influence peddling scheme since his earliest days in Delaware, and he just internationalized it when he became vice president and basically compromised himself in the eyes of our most potent adversaries, being China and Russia and, of course, Ukraine as well. And he still, the White House is sort of trying to ring-fence him from the problems that Hunter Biden is facing in that grand jury in Delaware. I mean, it's pretty clear that grand jury is getting very close to figuring out what went on with the Biden family's overseas very lucrative influence peddling scheme and all those millions of dollars that came into their bank accounts from China and Russia, Ukraine, Romania, and so on. And we know that they are starting to track that money to Joe Biden himself, because we know witnesses before the grand jury have been asked, who is the big guy? And the big guy, of course, is Joe Biden, as Tony Bobulinski told us, who was one of Hunter's business partners. And there are also lots of references in the laptop to the big guy being Joe Biden. If they're asking those questions and if they've subpoenaed, as we know they have, Hunter and Jim Biden, that's Joe Biden's younger brother, Hunter's uncle, the investigators in Delaware have subpoenaed their bank records and those of their other business partners. Now, if they've done that, they will get to the bottom of what we had a glimpse of on the laptop, which was that Joe Biden and Hunter Biden had mingled their finances. They had shared bank accounts, shared debit cards. Hunter was paying for his father's bills. Some of those bills we can see, like a monthly AT&T bill for a couple of $100s, renovations and upkeep on one of Joe Biden's Delaware mansions. And so that's the tip of the iceberg. It seems that from what Hunter Biden has said, that, you know, he said in one email or one text message to a family member that, you know, he was paying half his salary to his father. In another, he complains bitterly that he's not getting enough respect from the family because he's gone and supported them for the past 30 years. And we know that, you know, Hunter was tipped into these jobs at inflated salaries from the very beginning with his father's sponsors in Delaware and his father's, you know, donors. So this was a pretty crude family-based influence peddling scheme, but it, boy, was it lucrative.
It is lucrative, and the media is coming to terms with something. The first numbers I saw that that Hunter was involved in was something like $800,000 a year in Burisma. Then the media got a hold of a little more information that was raised then into the millions, and then $4 million was an estimate. And then with Peter Schweizer's reporting, $5 million, and then with Peter Schweizer's book on the Bidens, it went to $30 million.
Hunter's just borrowed $1 million to pay back his tax, a tax bill to try and avoid criminal charges for tax evasion with this grand jury. And he's borrowed that from a kind benefactor. He doesn't have access to money. We know that he does still, well, his lawyer says he's sold that 10% stake in the Chinese private equity firm BHR. So I guess we take his word for it, but I don't see any evidence of his having sold it on the Chinese register or the, you know, his company, Skenadley's, still listed as 10% owner. Maybe they're just very slow at updating their websites. That could be the case. But even so, BHR is, you know, potentially could be worth tens of millions of dollars, his stake, but I think possibly not. And I'm told it wasn't a very good investment. The most valuable investment they made was in this Face Plus Plus, which is a facial recognition software system that the Chinese use to surveil the Uyghurs. So that could be worth a lot. But a lot of the other things they invested in were duds, or they sold out of, you know, like the Chinese version of Uber too soon. So I'm not sure. He might make a couple of million out of that. And the rest of it, I mean, he got, you know, $1 million a year from Burisma, say $4 million. We've seen there was $6 million, another $5 million, another. But he had to share that with his family members, with Biden and, you know, Joe Biden. And he was paying $27,000 a month in alimony. And he had this raging crack habit and a very expensive lifestyle. I mean, he would fly always business class. He'd be jetting backwards and forwards. He would he would go on these long, month-long crack benders, where he'd have prostitutes and drug addicts and drug dealers traipsing through his hotel room, stealing everything inside, including his laptops and his phones and his wallet. So he wasted money like you wouldn't believe. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, he had, say, $15 million that we can actually trace that he just wasted and spent. I wouldn't be surprised if he really is broke. I mean, there is some talk of an overseas bank account that the Biden family may have access to. So that would be the sort of thing that you would expect the investigators to be able to follow. And, you know, it looks as if that Delaware investigation is coming to a point where it will be able to bring down indictments against Hunter Biden.
Yeah, and McIsaac also said, and I am just amused by the way in which the media gets a little more comfortable with the number, and the next number is even higher than another number. And the way in which they still ignore the story is, I have to laugh at it, because once you, you know, cross over into the absurd, there's nothing to do but laugh. In this country, our corporate media is part of the cabal, the cadre of the establishment, and there is no way in the world that most of us will ever get a straight story from this corporate media until there is a significant washing through of the talent that is leading the editorial enterprises in this country. I want to get your sense of the American national corporate outlets and what you think of their current condition and what it likely will lead to from here.
Well, look, it's disastrous. You just have, the most prestigious, well-known brands in journalism in America have become mouthpieces for the Democratic Party. And in fact, worse than that, they are part of the apparatus that is pushing the Democratic Party to the left. Because if you're a politician and you don't sign up to all the crazy, critical race theory and, rainbow gender ideology stuff, you will be, at best ignored, probably vilified in the pages of the New York Times, Washington Post, on CNN. And if you sign up to it and you're an advocate for it, they will just lavish you with wonderful praise, and you'll get, flattering photos in the magazines, and you will be a hero. And unfortunately, the public still, there's a vestige of trust and belief in these institutions, these formerly great institutions that have been hollowed out and hijacked. And there was I just was looking at something that Elon Musk put up, a chart of trust of the public in various media outlets. And for Democrats, PBS and CNN are their most trusted outlet. I mean, two of the most dishonest, lying outfits that you have in the country that whitewash everything that would be negative about the Democrats. And, we're on the Trump derangement train for Donald Trump's entire presidency. So that's pretty disturbing.
And who did that poll, Miranda?
I'm not sure. Elon Musk tweeted it, and he'd sort of shaved off any identifying marks on it.
My guess is one of the corporate outlets paying the pollster's contract.
Probably.
Because it is. It's a closed feedback loop now.
Totally.
That corporate money circles through media, the media then to the consumer / voter, and then back into the coffers of corporate America. It's a vicious cycle, if you will, rather than a virtuous one of any kind. Yeah. It's here to stay for a while, I believe, because we don't have anyone, in my judgment, with Donald Trump's courage. If he does not run for president of the United States, it's going to be a dramatic and suspenseful time existentially for America, I believe.
Yes, but even with Donald Trump as president, that doesn't affect how this corrupted media class behaves. But there is a little bit of good news on the horizon, I think. I mean, CNN has now been bought by John Malone, major shareholder, and Discovery, exactly. And John Malone has been talking about trying to get this cable channel that used to be all news, 24/7 news, respected for doing that, getting it back to its roots and being fair and impartial instead of just a 24/7 propaganda sheet for the Democrats. So that's good news there. That will make a difference. And I think, if you could grab hold of the New York Times and just, you don't have to make it conservative. It can still be a little left, just if it were honest and not pumping out very destructive cultural propaganda like the 1619 Project and all their vile race baiting that's caused so much damage in this country, because the New York Times sets the agenda for the rest of the media. I mean, I hate to say it, I hate to admit it, but that is the way it is. People look at that as being a bastion of honest journalism, all the news that's fit to print. It hasn't been that for a very long time. If it ever was, if you remember Walter Duranty, won a Pulitzer Prize for being a Stalin apologist. Right. And the New York Times never handed that back.
In the 1930s. And the result is the old gray lady ain't what she used to be, to put it kindly. It's intriguing that the national corporate media outlets align themselves steadfastly to the political establishment and to the deep state, that is the permanent bureaucracy. Mm. And what we witnessed over the course of Donald Trump's presidency, in fact, his candidacy through his presidency and then beyond, a persecution that is unprecedented in the annals of American history. And we still have people who say, well, what do you mean that the FBI lied, that the FBI didn't act? There are people, and I run into, I'm serious about this, intelligent, knowledgeable people who do not understand the link between Hunter Biden and the first impeachment of the president of the United States. They don't understand the role of the cover-up by the entire big tech social media vector, it's beyond a sector, that just brought down the curtain, as John Paul McIsaac put it, on October 14th, when the New York Post breaks the story, all of a sudden, New York Post is not a reputable news source. And I mean, when they, you know it better than I do, when that curtain came down, it was darkness for the entire nation.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, as we know, there are polls showing that if Biden voters had known about this scandal, that, you know, somewhere between 10 and 17%, depending which poll you look at, would have changed their vote. And that would have been enough potentially to change the outcome of the election, which is one of many ways in which the media and the establishment worked to rig the election results 100 different ways. And, you know, they have a few thousand votes here, a few thousand votes there. It all adds up to, you know, Joe Biden. We're now lumbered with Joe Biden, and we can thank a very dishonest media that spent almost the entire Trump presidency running lies about him, deliberately trying to destabilize him, to cripple his presidency, to, you know, take without any cynicism or skepticism or applying the most basic journalistic filter on the complete garbage that was being fed to them by anonymous, you know, sources, people like, you know, peddling the Steele dossier. And you know, you still have Democrats like Adam Schiff, who I can't believe that guy, who has been at the center of every vile scandal, from, you know, the Russia collusion hoax to claiming that the laptop was Russian disinformation. He was right out the front doing that. He's done more to peddle this false narrative of Russian disinformation than any other Democrat. Maybe, you know, Nancy Pelosi is close behind. And I just hope that after the midterm elections, when the Republicans get back control of the House and probably the Senate, that Adam Schiff is brought to account for his lies.
Yeah, when you say brought to account, what do you think what do you think reasonably that would look like, bringing Adam Schiff, a lying little Schiff, if ever there was one? And by the way, I still find it amazing that a lot of people are reluctant to call him a liar. Liar should be a billboard around his home. It should be you know, on a chain around his neck. And as far as I'm concerned, the word liar is the kindest thing that can be said about him. Why do you believe the media is so reluctant to call him what he has been throughout?
Well, he's pretty clever, and his lies have suited the narrative that the media wants to push. So, you know, for instance, during the impeachment of Donald Trump, the first impeachment over Ukraine and that phone call with Zelensky, Adam Schiff was talking to the so-called whistleblower and refused to, you know, this guy, Eric Chiramella, who's, you know, a State Department guy who's been involved.
You know, we can't say that name.
CIA analyst, we're not allowed to say that name. Oh, sorry.
You know, everybody in the media was being told, you can't say the name. And I'll be damned. They didn't. And for what reason? Because someone in corporate media was lining up, doing exactly what the hell they were told. And Eric, my good buddy, was sitting there playing every kind of game from Sunday to impugn a sitting president at the orders of his betters, which is, of course, not really very specific, because just about everybody is better than a coward like him.
Well, I mean, Adam Schiff used that sort of secrecy and that pretense at covering up for a whistleblower to basically engineer President Trump's impeachment based on completely bogus information from partisan people who had been involved with a lot of shady stuff in Ukraine that was happening with the State Department. And, you know, there were people in the State Department, which this is again on the laptop, people like George Kent and right. another guy called Amos Hochstein, who were, you know, mid-level State Department people involved in Ukraine and energy policy, who were disturbed about Hunter Biden's involvement with this corrupt energy company, Burisma, at a time, a very fragile time for Ukraine after the Maiden Revolution, when it was supposed to be rebuilding and with billions of dollars of IMF money, a lot of which went missing, and also billions of American money in aid. And you know, Joe Biden was the point man for Obama in Ukraine. He would fly in regularly and give these thundering speeches about corruption, and you've got to get rid of corruption. It's a cancer. While his own son is being paid $83,000 a month by the former energy minister, Zlochevsky, who made his billions from getting these free oil leases and gas leases in the Donbass. And that was what Burisma was exploiting. And that was why they had all that money to pay Hunter. And Zlochevsky was under investigation with, you know, Interpol around the world. He'd had millions of dollars frozen in a London bank account. He had the new Ukrainian government and a clean-skinned prosecutor in Shokin, who'd been brought out of retirement by the President Poroshenko, who was taking the Americans at their word that they wanted to stamp out corruption. So he brought this clean skin to start investigating corrupt people. And the most corrupt outfit that he found was Burisma. Then he started rounding up all the assets and investigating Burisma. And of course, that did not suit Joe Biden, because his own son was being paid by Burisma. So, you know, Joe Biden boasted about having insisted that that prosecutor Shokin be fired, and that he boasted that he withheld $1 billion of US aid until that happened. Mm-hmm. But what the New York Times and the Washington Post and the rest of the media took at face value was Joe Biden's reason for firing Shokin, and that was he said he was corrupt and he was not investigating Burisma. But that is just untrue on its face, because there is evidence that Shokin, just before he was fired, had seized all the houses and plots of land and Rolls Royce belonging to the Burisma owner, Zlochevsky, in Kiev. He had a warrant out for his arrest. And now Shokin has given interviews to Ukrainian media in which he said he was planning to subpoena Hunter Biden.
Right. And with that backdrop right now, I think you must have said the name Joe Biden half a dozen times within that, established perfectly the predicate for some question about his involvement in Ukraine and the purpose of his withholding $1 billion. This may sound familiar to many people listening to us, Miranda, but that is precisely the reason, the pretext for the Democrats to impeach President Donald Trump, because he was threatening to withhold information on, military aid, unless he got an investigation and information from Zelensky on that phone call. I think it was in July 25th of 2019. It's a difficult time for Americans, because they can't trust their media. They can't trust their government. By the way, we can go back to Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, September of 2020, testifying before Congress and warning everybody about what he called the drumbeat of Russian disinformation. That was to prepare the battleground for the Russian disinformation. And it is, and then what followed, of course, was the 51 veterans of the intelligence community. And then that was the shield for Joe Biden in the last debate of 2020.
Exactly. I mean, that was really one of the most disturbing and upsetting part of this was that, we sort of expected that the rest of the media would not treat that story about Hunter Biden's laptop seriously because they were all in the tank for Joe Biden. So that was really not such a surprise. What obviously was surprising was when big tech suppressed it, but they probably couldn't have gotten away with it for the full 3 weeks before the election, except that the 51 former intelligence bosses, people like John Brennan and James Clapper and Michael Hayden and Leon Panetta, wrote that letter. And, you know, they claimed in that letter that, in their expert opinion, the laptop and therefore our reporting had all the earmarks, I think they called it, of Russian disinformation. They had a couple of weasel words further down, which they're now using to justify the letter, because not one of them that we've contacted has rescinded their support for that letter or expressed any chagrin about having lied. They used all the authority of their former office, abused that authority and the prestige of the history of, you know, the CIA and the NSA and all those prestigious institutions to help Joe Biden out of a bind. And he was in a great bind. And you could just imagine behind the scenes the panic. At the time, if you remember, Joe Biden went to ground. He just went into his basement and did not come out. No one could get to him. They weren't answering questions. His media people were in a spin. They were telling one thing to one outlet and another thing to another. They were saying, oh, maybe there was a meeting with this Burisma guy that wasn't on his official diary, but it would have only been in passing and he doesn't remember it. They were at panic stations, and this letter was his get out of jail free card, and he used it with as if he'd really memorized the points around it. He said, you know, the intelligence community, and they've deemed that this laptop is Russian disinformation. He knew exactly what he was saying, even though he was foggy on everything else. This was the most important point he made, and it worked for him because no more questions were asked, and basically Donald Trump was shut down.
He was shut down, but it's important, I think, for us all, everyone listening to this show, to understand completely what happened. It was a coordinated, orchestrated effort among the deep state, the Democratic Party, their candidates, the DNC, and Hillary Clinton, and this ruse, this subterfuge, Russian disinformation was the weapon of choice for the Democrats, the deep state, and the corporate media from 2015 right through to this very day, because there are news outlets that use national security still as a reason to withhold a full-throated denunciation of the corruption in our government, our news organizations and media. And by the way, I also entertainment media. It reached into entertainment media as well, and intentionally. And and across our political system. It was a horrible and ugly day, October 14th, because of what descended. There is no reason it should have been October 14th, by the way, of 2020. It should have broken in October of 2019. Don't you agree?
well, December of 2019 anyway, when the FBI got hold of the laptop. I mean, there's no excuse for them not to have seen that evidence and seen that it was, relevant to the impeachment. And, I mean, it's just a pity. I think, you know, it goes to the sort of honesty of John Paul MacIsaac and the fact that he wasn't some sort of partisan stooge, because, he gave it to the FBI, thought that they would do the right thing. And it was only in the end of August that he actually, of the following year, so 8 months later, 9 months later almost, that he called Rudy Giuliani's lawyer and passed on that information. So, you know, he was an honest guy, very patriotic, trusted the FBI, but then came to realize that nothing was being done, that the president was being impeached anyway, and that all the information that he'd found that would have exonerated him, or at least explained why the president was so interested in getting to the bottom of the Biden corruption in Ukraine, none of that had been used. And we saw there was an FBI, the guy who was the head of their cyber division, was interviewed in Congress the other day. And I think Matt Gaetz was the congressman who really grilled him and said, "Where is Hunter Biden's laptop?" And the guy looked as if he was insulted to be asked such a question.
Yep.
He said, "We don't know. I have no idea where it is," you know? So that's really not good enough.
It's not good enough. And unless the Republicans take control, and I'm not talking about the rhinos, I'm talking about the real Republicans.
Yeah.
If they take control and the conservatives of the House, there is a chance. But I think I've got to be honest with everyone about this. I think it's the slimmest of chances, frankly. It exists. It's a possibility, but it's not a probability in Washington, D.C., because the corruption, ladies and gentlemen, is endless. It's pervasive. It is deep. It's evil incarnate. It infests every single institution in our government and in our political system. Do you think I'm exaggerating?
I don't, but I don't think it's all encompassing. I think there are still very good people there, and
Where are they, Miranda?
The U.S. Attorney's Office in Delaware appears to be doing a thorough and independent investigation. I mean, let's see, but this is what I hear.
Okay.
And they are following all the evidence where it leads, no matter where it leads. Obviously the boss of the U.S. Attorney in Delaware, David Weiss, is the Attorney General, Merrick Garland. His boss is Joe Biden. But I think Merrick Garland was burned by that just terrible incident where the FBI was sicked onto mums and dads at school board meetings. Seems from his questioning that he'd been kept in the dark on that. Maybe that was plausible deniability. Maybe that was, you know, his underlings keeping him in the dark. You know, there are some real activists in the Attorney General's office, as Bill Barr would say. He needs to worry about his own reputation. You know, this is a man who had designs on being a Supreme Court justice. So he doesn't want to go down with the sinking ship in history of the Biden administration. And so I suspect that he will just allow the investigation to take its course as it should. And I think that, you know, knowing what material there is, not just on the laptop, but in all of Tony Bobulinski's devices that he also handed over to the FBI and which are available to that grand jury, and also all the material, the money trail that has been uncovered so expertly and bravely, really against all sorts of defamation of them, Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson, the two Republican senators who alone have been running this investigation into Hunter Biden and the corruption that went on in Burisma and elsewhere, the bribery, the millions of dollars they've tracked through Treasury Department reports that have come from China and Russia and elsewhere into Biden bank accounts and the bank accounts of their business partners. And they were themselves disgustingly vilified by the Democrats, by the likes of Adam Schiff, as Russian disinformation merchants, agents of the Kremlin. Mitt Romney and Rob Portman, two Republican senators on the committee with Ron Johnson, refused to allow him to subpoena certain people, including Hunter Biden, including a Ukrainian witness who would have been very useful, and just succumbed to or pretended to believe or believed the defamation by the Democrats about Russian disinformation. So, you know, the Republicans really have themselves to blame. When they had power, they did not do the proper due diligence that was needed on Joe Biden, and they did not follow through on this corruption scandal. And only two senators really have been valiant in this. And I hope Ron Johnson has no trouble winning re-election.
Yeah, I agree with you about Ron Johnson. I think that, you know, frankly, there's even an ember or two flaring in Ted Cruz's heart, it seems, and I hope that continues. We also see a lot of opportunists stepping forward, as you might expect in this moment, on the part of Republicans. But I want to go back to the Delaware U.S. attorney. And point out something, I really do think it's material and important. That grand jury has been going for 4 years. 4 years. Now, I don't understand something, and I'm not a lawyer, but I am a fairly imaginative fellow from time to time, and I do get lucky when I think. 4 years for an investigation on national security areas involved, on the uppermost political governmental offices of this country. Don't you think somebody should light a fire? And Merrick Garland, you make him sound like a choir boy, Miranda. This man consented to treating outraged parents, defending their children, and insisting that the school system listen to them as domestic terrorists. And if he did not know that, if there was no antecedent, he certainly had a responsibility to hold accountable. I have not heard of a single person in the Justice Department being fired. I haven't heard of a single one. And Merrick Garland instead seems like he is definitely part of the problem, not the solution, at least to me.
Yes, I do agree with you, but what I will say is, yes, that was an appalling episode and reflected extremely badly on him. But what I will say is that he, you know, self-preservation wins over everything. And I think that he was badly burned by that. His reputation took an enormous hit, and that will be a stain on him forever. And I don't think he has the appetite to have any more stains on his reputation. You know, I believe he would resign rather than be party to crushing what the investigation in Delaware is finding and stopping them from making indictments if that's what they're going to do. So, until I hear otherwise, I'm not going to be overly cynical. I just see that this, you're right, they've been investigating Hunter since 2018, but COVID came in the middle, and it's the same as John Durham. I'm still willing to, expect that John Durham will come out at the end with some useful information for us and some indictments that are needed. But COVID really stopped them subpoenaing people, stopped the grand jury from convening. It really was, a real upset and delayed everything.
Yeah, I just want the American people, when they, and by the way, I love the way you girded yourself against this cynicism that has an unknown source in your statement. I had the feeling it was mine. So I'm going to repay the favor and say I'm girding myself against a wide-eyed Pollyanna optimism, and we'll call it even on the day.
Fair enough. Yes, fair enough.
I do want to turn to your most recent reporting, and because I think it is, as usual, right up to Miranda Devine standards, the idea that this suspect in the subway shooting and terrorist act, your thoughts on that, I think, are exactly right on. This act was committed at what, 8:30 in the morning, right? This incident. I didn't know the description of the man. I just knew he was about 5'5". He had a gas mask on, you know, which sort of makes it tough. Without any other features being broadcast by the media, didn't really want to catch this guy because there was being an incredible sensitivity about how helpful it would be to know. Was he white? Was he Hispanic? Was he black? Was he Asian? That would be a winnowing set of characteristics.
Well, look, the New York Post, I have to say, in our defense, did write that he was a black man. I'm not sure how long that...
Good on you.
Silence went. I mean, that could be the cops being politically correct. I wouldn't put it past them.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, and that's to the detriment of our safety again. But the whole PC woke attitude has, you know, permeated everything, including the FBI. And so, back in 2016, the FBI issued a report in which they identified a new form of domestic terrorism that they thought was a threat, and they called it Black Identity Extremism. Mm-hmm. And it stemmed from, these BLM, protests, riots, whatever, and the previous year, the massacre of those Dallas police officers, 6 killed, numerous others injured by a black nationalist, a follower of Nation of Islam. So this is really rancid anti-white racism. It is the very definition of hate speech. And, the FBI was just following the evidence and I guess gearing up to start tackling this new form of domestic terrorism. And what happened? As soon as their report came out, there was an immediate backlash from the media. They were sneered at. They were condemned as racist. You had, legal activists coming out and saying this is like the worst of the, the Hoover days and targeting black people. And, they were kowtowed by this. Within months, they'd stopped using the term. In 2019, you had Christopher Wray appearing before Congress saying, no, they don't use that term, and that really white supremacy was a big factor in domestic terrorism. And there you go. And then you go right up until January 6th, where the president, Nancy Pelosi, the FBI, all in, lockstep, are talking about these Trump supporters, and some of them obviously did the wrong thing and shouldn't have broken in, et cetera. No one's defending anybody who broke the law. But they were not white supremacists at all. I mean, it was ridiculous. It had nothing to do with race. It was about their feeling that the election had been stolen and they wanted to stop that happening. And so... nothing to do with white supremacy. It's been completely, the narrative has now been changed that they're domestic terrorists and white supremacists. And meanwhile, just a couple of months after that January 6th riot, what happens? You get another black nationalist, Nation of Islam guy slams his car into 2 Capitol police officers outside the Capitol, killing one. And that story is just memory hold immediately because it runs counter to the narrative. And, we've had other incidents where the black nationalists have come out and committed acts of domestic terrorism. And that leads us to Tuesday's rampage on the subway. This guy from, he's obviously got a screw loose, as I guess they all do, but his outpourings on social media are all about black nationalism, Nation of Islam. He even has an image of that cop killer from Dallas, Micah Johnson, on his social media. I mean, Black Panthers, Black Liberation Army, BLM. He talks constantly about a looming race war. He's vicious and hate-filled about white people. He talks about black people who get on with white people as being, you know, somehow at fault as well. He cries at one point when he shows an image of Judge Ketanji Brown, who'd just been named to the Supreme Court, and showed that she was married to a white man who he called the enemy. I mean, he's crying because she married a white man. So this guy is rancidly racist. And yet, that sort of ideology, the FBI has deemed doesn't exist.
Amazing. Amazing. And what you could really call BIE really is black supremacy.
Exactly.
And the fact that this language is so important to certain interested groups, vested interests of all sorts, control the language, you control the mind, control the language, and you control the debate. And that's exactly what the left is so, the Marxist left is particularly gifted in doing. And it is one of the many clumsy areas for Republicans and conservatives. It's language and their inattention to it when it matters most. And that is in communicating to the American voting public. I want to say to you, as always, Miranda, it is terrific talking with you. Always educational, informative, and entertaining. For all of us, I get to be entertained and informed and educated too. We always love the opportunity to talk with you. You get the concluding thoughts as always on this broadcast, our guest with the last word.
Well, thanks, Lou. You're so kind and generous always. And I love coming on your show. I want to leave with a bit of a Pollyanna, upbeat note.
There you go.
And that is based in evidence, though. And that is, look at the latest Quinnipiac poll on Joe Biden, and you see a nation that is rapidly being red-pilled. His disapproval level is just through the roof. I think, overall it's 54%. But when you look, his approval level's down at 33%. But when you look at independents, 26%. You look right at Hispanics, 26%, and young people, 18 to 34, he's down at 21%. So that tells you that people are not buying the lies that are spewed daily from Joe Biden, from his White House, and from the media that has been gaslighting them for 8 years at least. Let's hope that that's the beginning of a new dawn, that people are less likely to believe the lies and more likely to get out and vote. And it just puts the pressure on the Republicans to clean up their act and make sure that the elections are fair and free, and that when they get into office, they actually bring people to account for all the things that they've done wrong, chiefly Biden opening the border to millions of illegal migrants. That has to be remedied. People have to be punished for that. And secondly, they have to look into, have investigations into the laptop. I mean, it's not just the laptop, obviously, it's the Bobulinski stuff as well. They have to investigate the Biden influence peddling scheme without fear or favor, because he's not the only person in Washington who's been influence peddling and making money out of bribery and corruption. So it's also Republicans in the picture. So they have to be willing, good, honest Republicans with integrity, to even target their own side.
Well said, and I accede to your optimism on that, because as they say, numbers don't lie. And to see these numbers this low for Biden is indeed encouraging. Miranda Devine, New York Post, greatest columnist, in my opinion, in the country. And I really thank you.
Thanks. You too, Lou. And happy Easter.
Happy Easter. The New York Post's Miranda Devine, great journalist, great American. And I want to point out, Steve Bannon advised President Trump to start spending big to assure the candidates that the president had endorsed win in the primaries. And today it appears that Mr. Trump is following Steve's counsel and has started to pour cash into the Georgia Republican gubernatorial primary. It's Trump's Save America PAC's initial spend, an injection of $500,000 into the Georgia race between Trump-endorsed David Perdue and Governor Brian Kemp. Thanks for being with us today. And tomorrow, I talk with Luke Rosiak, author of Race to the Bottom, Uncovering the Secret Forces Destroying American Public Education. You don't want to miss it. Till then, God bless you, and God bless America.